You're listening to Make It Thrive, the Company Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Lizzie Benton, Company Culture Coach and founder of Liberty Mind, and I want to inspire people to create progressive company cultures where our human potential can thrive. In this podcast, I talk to organizations, thought leaders, and change makers about the impact of company culture. Together, we can make it thrive. This season is sponsored by Semco Style UK. The Semco Style framework is a practical approach which helps organizations create a human-centered workplace and brings a proven method to enable you to shape how people experience work. Whether you're looking to transform your business for success, become more resilient to the challenges of an ever-changing world, or create a culture that delivers more engaged people, the Semco Style methodology can help you on your way. Are you ready to discover the tools to transform your organization? Visit semcostyle.co.uk. Hi everyone, and welcome back to season 11, where this season I'm chatting with progressive organizations who are doing work differently. I hope that this season so far is making you consider trying out your own experiment. What is something that you could play with after being inspired by our guests? Now, before I introduce this episode, one thing I would love to know is whether any of you would be interested in a Make It Thrive Live. I know that some of you are not UK-based, so I was thinking of doing some live virtual sessions where you can come along, ask guests questions, and be the first to hear some of these sessions. If that's something you'd love to be a part of, do drop me a message, plus any particular topics or areas about work that people just aren't talking enough about. And as always, you know, I want to make these sessions super useful and inspirational, but also practical. So if you're up for a Make It Thrive Live and you think there's a topic that isn't getting discussed, come and tell me about it and let's see if I can make it happen. Right, on to today's session. You will hear me talk a lot about Semco Style, so who better to share more about Semco Style than the global team? So today I'm joined by Daphne and Christian from Semco Style Global. If you're new to Semco, the Semco Style philosophy has its origins in the 1980s when a 21-year-old Ricardo Semler took over the Semco Group, a mixer and agitator manufacturer in Brazil, from his father. So he took it over from his father and decided to do things differently. From day one, he turned the old corporate hierarchy on its head. He did that by delegating as much decision-making power to the workforce as possible. Ricardo and Semco gained international recognition for their groundbreaking approach to management, and they're now spreading this way of working through Semco Style Institute, helping companies all over the world. Today, Semco Style Institute is active in over 30 countries, and they have a thriving community of partners and certified experts, creating people-centric company cultures with a proven methodology. In this episode, I'm joined by two members of the global team, Daphne and Christian. Daphne is a true believer of human-centered leadership. She believes that if you change the way you lead, you can release the innate potential of employees to adapt, perform better, and take ownership. Within the Semco Style Global team, Daphne takes care of brand positioning, marketing, and international expansion. She also supports the community with successful go-to-market strategies. Christian is a passionate imagineer shaping the future of work through people-centric leadership and continuous improvement. His approach focuses on understanding constraints and conceptualizing innovative growth journeys that reveal the hidden potential in people and systems. In the Semco Style Global team, Christian looks after the development and improvement of programs and content and making this available through SSI's customized ecosystem platform. Today, we chat about the Semco Style philosophy and what they've learned being a self-managed global team for the past 7 years. So, let's dive in.
Hi guys, and welcome to Make It Thrive. So tell us a bit more about Semco Style Institute on a global scale.
Thank you so much for having us today, Lizzie. Semco Style Institute, well, it started 7 years ago, right? When Semco Style Institute was founded, but our story of course goes back to the early 80s already, when Ricardo made this huge impact in his manufacturing company in Brazil. Fast forwarding that to 2016, Semco Style Institute was born to bring his philosophy to companies around the world. And we've been doing that ever since. So we've been able to bring his philosophy, the practices from what happened in the 80s, back to a theory, back to a proven methodology, and help organizations to actually make a change happen, because we truly believe that if you put people first, amazing things can happen. And we're doing that around the world now. So we help companies to organize in a more democratic way. We have partners, clients, and people in our network in over 30 countries today. SSI Global is the global team connecting all the partners together, but of course, living our own philosophy, we are a circular community. So we're trying to do it in the best way we can, living our own philosophy. But active in over 30 countries, working with partners and making a change happen all around the world.
And a lot of people might not realize quite how global Semco Style is, because like you say, if they've read, you know, Maverick by Ricardo Semolino, everything started in Brazil. But really, like you said, this is a global movement and you're a global team. So it's really kind of all over the world now.
Absolutely. Yes. So where it all started with Semco in Brazil, and the books, the TED Talks that have been watched millions of times, leaders around the world were inspired by Ricardo's story. But what makes us maybe even more unique today is the fact that it's been proven around the world within different companies, different industries, different cultural backgrounds. So Ricardo's story, the philosophy, it's cornered around the philosophy of what happened in the 80s with Ricardo. But the fact that we've been evolving ever since, and that we have all these stories around the world today, is what makes it even more unique and much more relatable to a lot of leaders around the world today. Yes, absolutely.
Amazing. I find it just incredible. And you know, being part of the Semco Style community, I think it's always so fascinating to experience everything that's going on a global perspective. When you hear about the stories that are happening in China and hear about the stories that are happening in Italy, and it's just fantastic to see this kind of global movement happening, because like you said, so often it's really easy to think that this is only happening in one place and it's just one area that this kind of movement is happening in, but really it's global. And one thing I think that I really wanted to touch on in the conversation with you guys today is, you know, this season is all about progressive organizations and how we do things differently. And we've been talking a lot about practices and, you know, what people do differently in terms of that sort of more traditional way of working. But something that I really wanted to kind of dive into today was this idea of living the philosophy of Semco Style and what that means. I touched on it very, very briefly in my last conversation with Kirsten at PTHR, because we were talking about this sense of being, you know, like really embodying self-management and what does that look like. So, you know, what is the philosophy of Semco? You know, how do you guys define that?
Well, I can jump in on that one if you want. We always built on the original philosophy from Ricardo Semler, and he would always be quite vocal about giving people the freedom, and over the long haul, their successes will far outnumber their failures, which is a difficult thing to believe in, because it assumes that people will make mistakes and things will go wrong. But that really is still the core of what we believe in, is the freedom and empowering people with knowledge, with information, and then with autonomy to go ahead and do things. think that's the core of what we believe in, and that's also the core of how we start with any engagement, whether it's a partner, whether it's a client. That is the beginning. If you believe in that, we take it further, and then we can help and coach and assist you and take this on a bigger journey. And making that a bit more practical, I think if you look at the core of Semco's style, then you'll see the three words: democracy, common sense, and aligned self-interest. So what we've also found over the years, you know, the 1980s Maverick Ricardo story has this philosophy, and bringing that to companies in a structured way is a little bit more complex. So those three words really bring a bit of a groundedness to this philosophy. So if you believe in democracy, bring people into the conversation. Common sense, simplifying bureaucracies, busting those silly things that keeps us back, that keeps the inefficiencies back, that slows people down. And really just aligning on an individual level, the aligned self-interest. Who are you as an individual? Why are you here? Why are you working for this company? What are you doing here? If I understand you as an individual, then we can grow and build together. So I think that really is still the core of what we believe in, but also a way that we brought it to companies and make it more real into an approach that we can follow.
Absolutely. And do you find that when people say things like that, because, you know, the core philosophies and the principles are kind of like so obvious, right? It's like, well, of course we should have more democracy. Of course we should just be doing common sense. You know, like people often say, you know, joke that common sense is a superpower. But actually, you know, it's because we've got so ingrained into these bureaucratic ways of working that common sense feels like something that is slightly different, and we don't quite know how to articulate that, maybe. Like, what is common sense to me might differ from common sense to somebody else. So what do you find people kind of grapple with when they're really understanding those principles? Is there something that kind of jumps out at you?
Well, they say genius lies in simplicity, right? So I think that's probably the big thing that we always, when we show the core philosophy, and you see those really simple words, easy words, trust, self-management, creativity. You see things like transparency, busting bureaucracies. You see common sense, aligned self-interest, democracy, and people go, can't be that easy. And it really, well, it isn't that easy, because that's a starting point. It's a way of giving people a certain language. It's a way of equipping leaders to go into an organization and saying, you know what, we've got a language, we've got a methodology for what we want to do. And whatever we do, we align to that language. So if we're busy working with people, if we're sharing information, if we're teaching people how this organization works, we're busy enhancing trust. We're practicing democracy. We're asking who you are as an individual, why you are here. So I think, yeah, the difficulty is sometimes when people see the simplicity and they think this is too easy. But the moment they start practicing it, they realize there's really quite a lot behind this. And you truly have to believe in this or in this way of working to take it further and to drive it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's the same goes for the phrase treating adults as adults. It sounds so easy as well, right? And I think also a core part of our philosophy, and it sounds so easy. I mean, you're an adult at home. You can buy a house. You can decide to get a mortgage. You start a family. You make big decisions. And as soon as we go to the office, all of a sudden we start to treat adults as children. How do we change that? It sounds easy, but it's not. In the end of the day, it's we are so grounded, we are so used to this command and control kind of structures. Especially, I think still, maybe the newer the later generations the education starts to adjust. It's getting better, I would say. But most of us have not been educated that way, and we've not been growing up in that way. So it's a process of changing. And I think that's where the unlearning phase keeps coming in. And that's what we see as well, even today. It in a certain way, never becomes easy because we tend to go back to certain structures that we have or that we're just simply used to. So challenging that each and every time and keep unlearning, I guess, is what's needed to make it actual happen.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, it's, yeah.
I mean, it's also equipping leaders with that, the tenacity to keep on going. So yes, I mean, we are unlearning, we are changing behaviors, because very rarely we'll find a brand new leader that we can teach all the new things and they will just be amazing from then onwards. You're always working with people who has certain behaviors, and behaviors that has come on for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. It is about, like Daphne said, it's unlearning. And then the reality is, every once in a while, crisis strikes. And how do we equip leaders with that tenacity to keep on going? And even though you sometimes revert back to your old behaviors, at least realize it. Go to your team and say, oh, guys, this is what I just did. I'm so sorry for this. Or realize what went wrong and then say, let's build further. So it's, there is a bit of unlearning there, but it's also, there's a lot of that openness, the sharing, there's a bit of the vulnerability that has to come out as well. Because we're all learning. This is not a manager teaching a team a process. This is us co-creating and working together to a new way.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, absolutely. I can relate to that so much, because it's that belief that as leaders, we have to kind of have a different external facade, like everything is fine, everything is in control, like, you know, that almost dehumanizing ourselves as professionals. We kind of wear that professional mask, and you know, we kind of separate ourselves so early on as managers or leaders against the rest of the team, and I think that really takes a lot of, you know, I know in some concept we call that like brave leadership as well, you know, that's bravery, isn't it? Having the courage to sometimes be more human.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think that's where the full transparency part comes in, right? So how can we be as transparent as possible? And why wouldn't we be? Because it is scary. Maybe we have been hiding certain things. And why do we hide them? Because if we hide them, either it's either not going to be solved or not going to be, or people start to fill in certain gaps because they know something is going on, right? So as soon as we are able to be transparent, we can make certain decisions altogether, and we can take that to grow or to learn and to adapt and to eventually also innovate. But starting with making things transparent, and for people to have all the information to be involved, because we can say that we are working in a democratic environment, but if people don't have the information, how can we expect them to make certain decisions, right? So it's this brave leadership, the bravery, the vulnerability, the capability to be open. It's a journey on itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That bravery, we've had so many discussions with people about what is bravery, and oh man, we've been so indoctrinated with bravery. It's Superman, it's Batman. You must be able to hold up a truck, or you must stop a train, or you must be able to fly. This is bravery, you know? Going into war situations with big guns, that's bravery. Goodness. Bravery is waking up every morning, going to your team and encouraging them to take it on. Take on the issues of the world and just working at it every single day. Bravery is that leader that doesn't back down. I'm there. I'm helping. I'm supporting. I'm coaching. That's the real bravery. And I think there's a big piece of work to be done to just redefine what is bravery. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that I really wanted to dive into today with you both is that, you know, Suncoast Style Global has, you know, is a self-managing entity. So what I want to know is, like, what does that look like for you guys, and how does that, you know, that idea of practicing what you preach manifest, and what does that journey look like for you as an organization?
I shouldn't say it, but every time I hear that, I think scary. It's scary, right? Because inadvertently, you're giving up control, and everybody says, are you crazy? Go and do those things, you know? So there's a scariness in letting things go. And in Semco style, I mean, we often talk about practicing what we preach, like you say as well. And it's all about giving up the control, but then the question is, how do you remain in control without being controlling? And that's, we have to take a minute to think about that. So for us, it's very much about alternative controls. So although it's scary, we try and put things in place that helps us to see who is where. Where are the partners? Where are our experts? Where are the people that has been trained on Semcastyle? Where are the clients that is working with Semcastyle? And that is a big journey to try and find those alternative controls, to try and find those different ways of seeing performance, of seeing who is where, who's running ahead, who's falling behind, and then finding the spaces to go and support, to help where it's needed.
Yep. Absolutely, yes. And I think it's, the alternative controls, but also where do we align? And where do we learn and exchange all these ideas together, right? Because that's the other side of the way we work with all this freedom. So if we have some forms of control in place, of course, to align and to make sure that we have a certain quality that we deliver around the world, but there is so much freedom as well. And how do we also bring that back? So we can all learn from these ideas, because that's that continuous experimentation and innovation part that is such an important part of our philosophy as well, which is also not always easy as we are scattered around the world and everyone is busy with its day-to-day operations and urgencies and opportunities that are coming up. So finding a rhythm there, bringing that back, I guess... This on itself is a continuous experimentation for us, because at the beginning of this year, we made certain decisions on like, let's try a new way of bringing everyone together. Let's try to come up with a new process, bringing certain groups to life and see how it goes. And we have made, I think, 6 or 7 alterations after that already, because we're like, okay, well, it seems to work, but we also got some feedback. Oh, maybe it's better to work in another way, or oh, actually, maybe we were still controlling a bit too much, and that's reflecting on our own work every day. It's like it's a realization of that unlearning that I talked about earlier. Even though we talk about Semcastyle every day, we help organizations to make changes. We keep realizing ourselves that you do. I mean, we're all human in the end of the day, right? So we keep making mistakes ourselves, and we learn from that. And I think that's also fine. I mean, that's good. So we learn and we adapt, and we also forget things sometimes, and then we try to learn and then bring it further from there.
It's that continuous seesaw. It's like I'm controlling too much, and I'm controlling too little. I'm controlling too much, I'm controlling too little. And you're balancing until you realize there's the sweet spot. It's not control anymore. We found a balance. Everything works well. Cool. And then the reality is 6 months later, it changes again. And you have to adapt, you know? So I think it's probably if we practice what we preach, it's about continuous experimentation as well. Continuously experimenting, continuously going back and forth, and just realizing when you are hitting a boundary and you realize, oh, this is too far, take it back. Oh, this is too little, bring it up again. And it's finding that continuous balance and living with that uncertainty, right? Mm. So living with the uncertainty that you will never have it perfect. You will never sit down in a January strategic session, plan the year, have all your beautiful statements, and then just execute them. The reality is, by February, things change. And then come March, you change it again. And then June, you quickly redo the budget. And July, we replan again. And that's the business world we live in at the moment. And you have to have that mindset of working through that.
Yeah. And if I can add to that, so that's when we look at how we work with our entire community around the world, right? But if I make it even smaller, just within our own global team, we are scattered around the world ourselves. So practicing what we preach is what we do every day within the core team as well. And there is such a, huge focus on full transparency, taking up a responsibility. And there is no other way to be successful as an asynchronous team as we are. That's what I truly believe in. And just to name a very a specific example where we had an urgent opportunity coming in a few months ago, the fact that we were able to pull together the right people with the right skills instantly, being able to just quickly align on a few things and then just work on it asynchronously. Well, I worked on a few things. I handed it over. I went to bed. Christian took it from there. I wake up. It's like brought to the next level. I can take it from there. We don't need each other at the same moment, at the same time, because first of all, we trust each other. We are very much aligned on what we want to achieve. We have certain, we have that same language. We have that same philosophy in mind. And I think that's what makes it, that's what made it possible in this specific case to deliver something within 24 hours with multiple people working on it and just delivering something that we were amazingly, very happy with that product that we could bring to an end client. And I think that's a good example of how self-management can work in its best way.
Great.
I think Ricardo Semler had has the book, The 7-Day Weekend, but with asynchronous work, a bit of tongue-in-cheek, we actually get to a, 18 to 24-hour workday. And it's not based on one person. It's it's because we can work asynchronously, handover. It's still your working day. It's your normal time. It's you're not exhausted. You're not doing overtime in the evening. But by handing it off between people, suddenly you get much more done in a short period of time than in a in the normal day.
Yeah, and what a difference, right? When in a traditional organization, there might be the gatekeeper of that thing, right? And that thing would probably never see multiple team members, let alone have iterations happening on it across the team. And that just goes to show the power of that trust and alignment, and how you can execute something with so much value.
It really, I think you said it, the core word there is alignment. It's, I cannot for the life of me think of any spreadsheet or document that describes point by point what we need to achieve as a team. We don't have those things. We've got a mirror board that highlights high level where we're going. We've got some KPIs that we are tracking. Yes, we've got goals and objectives that we are tracking. Yes, but we spend most of our time on alignment. If we all know what the outcome is that we need to achieve, doing it, just hand it over to the right skills. And whoever is the skill will take it up, leader on demand, one of our practices. They will step up, they will do it. That's the reality.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose one question I have for you is, what continues to surprise you about how you work together and working in a self-managed way? Is there anything that continuously comes up and surprises you?
Ooh. I don't think it becomes easier, right? It's that's maybe one of the surprises, is it's never, you never reach that point where you go, yep, I'm in control, this is good, it's working, we are done. I always joke with people and say, well, remember, this is not an audit system. I cannot come in with my little check sheet and say, yes, we've achieved. I can do it for today, but it will probably be different tomorrow. So I think it's that the continuous journey that we are on, that it remains a surprise, that even though you think now we figured it out, something new comes in and you have to work at it again. So I think for me, that's one of the big things that stands out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it goes back to that unlearning phase again as well. It never becomes easy indeed. But maybe what also stands out is that you can have such big impact with such little changes. It's often very small tweaks that can make a tremendous difference in the way we perceive things, or how we can change a certain way of working, or change a discussion, or if there's anything specifically going on. If you are able to zoom out again, because when we look from the self-management perspective, and like there's always multiple ways to reach your goals, right? So taking that moment to realize like what's actually going on and how can we make the most out of it, that surprises me as well, because these options are always there, no matter the situation, and how small changes can have big impact.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I really love the book Atomic Habits by James Clear.
Yeah.
And, you know, just it always comes down to that atomic, those small micro things that you can do, you know, that can make such a big impact. And it really is true, you know, when we are able to zoom out and just change even the smallest of things really makes a difference. And like you said earlier, sometimes it is really difficult because we default so much to old ways of doing things. And, you know, although I know all of the SEMCO framework and the roadmap and all of the practices, sometimes I'll be like, oh, hang on a minute, why am I not using my own SEMCO style on myself? It's like, oh, I've got all these tools that I teach and I practice with my clients, but sometimes I'm not actually doing that with my own business.
It's the hairdresser's hair that's the most chaotic and the sweetest child that's always the naughtiest. You know? we came to a realization like that earlier this year as well. We suddenly found ourselves in a space where our core team was, it's a fairly small team. It's a focus team. And suddenly at the other end, the community, the international community grew to an extent where you can't just check in with everybody every day. 5 years ago, there were two country partners, and it was easy to follow up on everything. And there were 20 people trained on expert. It's easy to check in. And now we found ourselves in a space where it reached that tipping point. And we immediately said, well, we have to do things in a different way. Let's go and find some solutions. You know, and you tend to jump on Google, and you tend to search management philosophy, or you tend to search, and then at one point it gives you that stupid, silly me kind of moment where you go, come on, I've been teaching people these things for 5-6 years. Let's just implement our own roadmap. And that is the journey we've been on from the beginning of this year. So we call it living our own philosophy. But it's a bit strange, but maybe that's a surprise in itself. You would think that we would naturally practice our own practices, but it doesn't always happen. So with intent, we started practicing those things from the beginning of this year. It was a big surprise to see how many of those things we're actually doing already, which at least was a good thing. That, you know, it would have been a surprise if we didn't do those things. But we're doing a lot of the practices already, but now we're formalizing it. We're almost like ticking it off and saying, yes, it is there. Yes, we're doing it. Yes, we can make it stronger. And we very much this year for us was that first phase of taking a brave leadership step, running a lot of experiments, trying new ways of working. And we slowly but surely moving more towards, let's establish fully self-managed or self-directed environments. And that's the living philosophy that hopefully comes to life for us.
So it's been 7 years of SSI Global. Are there any kind of your top 3 to 4 lessons on this journey so far? You know, you talked about that practicing what you preach coming to life again. But are there any other kind of lessons that, you know, might help our audience who are maybe intrigued about going down the self-managed journey?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think we can share quite a few. And the thing that would come to mind for me first, well, there are two things, I guess, that really stand out for me is, first of all, self-management itself is not the goal. It really is a means to an end. It's finding out why you want to do certain things differently, or why there is this core belief of putting people first and how it can have such a big impact on your customers or on the people that you work with. And that could determine your path. And it doesn't mean that it needs to be a full-blown transformational journey that includes years of work and changes and has such a big impact. And I think that connects back to like these small changes can have a lot of impact already. There is no one way, one size fits all kind of approach. And that's truly what we believe in as well. So Sam Cosell is all about co-creative approach, finding the best way forward together with the companies that we work with. But I think in general, when founders or leaders or managers consider making a jump, considering making that jump, and it's not an easy one to make it small again. Know what you're focusing on. It might feel daunting, like, okay, what's going to happen? But yeah, make it as small and tangible as possible and take it from there and celebrate small wins and engage your people in that. And then you will see, I think that's what most of the people that we work with see happening is as soon as you've seen the benefits, you will not want to go back. It doesn't make sense to go back. And whatever that benefit is, it could be very small, and it doesn't even need to become fully self-directed once. It shouldn't be the goal at all. Start small, keep it small, and take it from there. I think that's my biggest learning. Yeah, and finding your own way in that.
Yeah. I think it's working in this group, but also working with some clients. It's not to overplan. We so often get stuck in detail, strategic sessions and planning, and we're trying to lay out the roadmap specifically for the next 5 years. We know it's going to change. And maybe rather focus on the fact that it will change and rather plan for the next month and do something for the next month rather than, you know, trying to plan for the next 5 years. So I think for me, the big lesson is, and I see that in our expert program as well, everybody wants to know, what is the plan? Where are we going? And how do we plan with a client? And I almost want to say it's impossible. Just assume it's impossible. Make a decision. What is that first thing that jumps up at you that says, you know, this is a big issue for us? Work on that. Find the successes, like Daphne said, celebrate them. Great. Move on to the next thing. Every so once in a while, look back at those things that you've done and just check whether they're still in place, whether they're still going well. And if they've been lost, just revamp again, pick it up again. But yeah, make a decision, do something, get started. That's really important.
Fantastic insights there, guys. Oh my goodness. And I can really resonate as well with what you said there, Daphne, about, you know why you're going on the journey in the first place. I think it's really easy when organizations are looking to change something for whatever reason it might be, whether there's a pain going on or they want to kind of evolve the way they're working. But it's really easy to see some of these self-management as a trend that you need to jump onto, mm-hmm. rather than seeing it as a means to an end and a way of getting somewhere. And I think that's also the difficulty sometimes that, you know, when we're talking about self-management, that people think that they just have to do it because it's the new thing to do, rather than thinking about, oh, why are we doing this in the first place? What are we hoping to achieve with this way of working?
Exactly. I think that's what we've seen happening a lot with agile implementations in the past as well, right? I think a lot of the research shows that company culture remains the biggest obstacle for why agile is not being successfully implemented, or why the implementation is not successful. Yeah, so really understanding why you want to do something, and not seeing this as a trend, but a true belief. Yeah,
I think sometimes you try, and if you look at self-management, people also get stuck with the word self-management because it is complex in itself. How will I ever get this right? And Lizzie, I think you just said the word, the pain points. Go back to the issues of the business. Fix the issues. Now you have a language. You've got the right words. You've got maybe the Semco style framework or the roadmap. These are things that assist you as a leader. So you know where you're going. You've got the words. You've got a framework. But work on the real issues. And as you build those practices, as you build those new routines, when you look back very quickly, you start to touch on all of those new words that you've learned, all those new routines or rhythms. And you've started to build your own system. And I think that's where the power lies. We recently heard from one of our specific clients, they said, people defend what they help to build. And that's the reality. So get people in this journey, get them along with you. If you all build it, or if we all build it, if we all look back and we go, this is ours, we believe in this, you don't need to do change management. Yeah. You don't need to convince anybody. You don't need to prepare anybody. It's just, this is our system. This is just normal to us.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we start wrapping up, one thing I would love to know is, what is lighting you up at the moment in the world of SEMCO? What is getting your bellies on fire and excited?
Getting the bellies on fire. I think for me, it really is the growth of the community and how we're all doing it together. And the fact that we see all these success stories popping up around the world, and maybe taking it a bit broader than SEMCO only, because I feel like together with other movements, we're all pioneering together, right? We want to make a change happen, and we do that one organization at a time. If we realize what Ricardo started like over 40 years ago by making a change happen in his company, and it was being perceived so disruptive back then, it's still disruptive today. And that's a bit unfortunate, because it means the vast majority of companies is still not working in this way. But it's picking up. It's changes are happening. And I think we do that all together. We make big impact on people's life. And I hope we can only see that growing further. And that's, I think we all truly believe that this is the future. So,
I think building on that, I've spent the last month or two writing what we call the SEMCO style stories. And there were three specific stories that I was involved in. And it's, I think, reading those things over and over and realizing this, it's not a fad. It's not just another new thing that's popping up in disguised in a different jacket. You know, this really is a completely different approach, but it's working. There are real benefits and there are real stories. It's not fake stories. And I think for me, that's the convincing part of this, is if I speak to those people, if I hear the stories, if you look at the companies actually flourishing, it is something to believe in. And I also think the interesting thing is that it's still early days. We are really just scratching the surface of what we now call self-management or people-centric workplaces. This is the starting point. It's been the starting point for quite some years, but we have to change. We have to reach that tipping point again. I believe strongly in the next 10, 15, 20 years, people are going to look back to these times and say, goodness, why haven't we done this earlier? We should have done this long time ago. And that's hopefully when we reach the masses. For me, I think the thing that's lighting up me, or that's giving me some fire in the belly, is that there is still quite a number of years left in this. We are barely scratching the surface. We are starting a great new process in many companies. I just wish more of them will take this journey on.
Yeah, I totally hear your rally call there, Christian. I do. I'm with you on it all the way. Thank you both so much for joining me on today's podcast. It's been an absolute joy to chat with you, and I could make this episode so much longer. But unfortunately, we have to say our goodbye. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Cool.
Thank you so much for having us.
You've been listening to Make It Thrive, the company culture podcast, with me, your host, Lizzie Benton. If you've enjoyed listening and want to keep up with all things culture, don't forget to subscribe. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to welcoming you back next week.